Hello and welcome to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. I'm Kelly Taylor. Today on the show are two boss ladies, Marla Tellez, who is an anchor here at Fox Los Angeles and does a regular segment on the show called Hot Property, where she tours some of the beautiful high dollar listings that are on the market around the Los Angeles area. In addition, Tammy Pardy joined us, who is a self-made entrepreneur and actually ranked the number one real estate broker in Los Angeles. She's the CEO and founder of Halton Pardy & Partners, and her company has done over $3 billion in residential and commercial real estate since 2005. So she knows real estate. And together we chatted all about sort of the buying and selling 101, you know, what to ask and look for if you're thinking of buying a home, thinking about selling one, how to prep your home, some of the most extravagant things they've seen in homes around Los Angeles, you know, pros and cons of investing in property. Tammy also has her own foundation where she does a lot of great philanthropy work. We talked about a lot. I love chatting with them, so I hope you enjoy.
From the Fox 11 studios in Los Angeles, California, it's the Olympic and Bundy podcast with host Kelly Taylor.
Do people in the real estate industry get annoyed with real estate reality TV?
It's just not reality, it's just bizarre.
It creates like expectations that aren't necessarily true, like about how fast something goes, or
yeah, and just like the fight and like the phone calls and the slamming of the fight. Just not. I did Million Dollar Listing with Josh Flagg, and literally when we were shooting it, they were trying to catch me into doing something that I didn't want to say, and I was like, no, like I was ruining their whole shoot.
She really? Was keeping it real.
You know, yeah. It's yeah. Like trying to negotiate and then slam the phone down. I'm like, no.
Yeah. Gosh, no. Someone that I know is a real estate agent in Cincinnati, and he was saying that he sold a house for a couple, and then they called his agency and they were like, we want to be on House Hunters and we need my friend to do this for us. Like, but it was basically all after the fact, after they'd already closed on a house. The producers like picked three houses for them to go through, and it was all fake.
Yeah, it is.
I'm like, that's like,
it actually
hardly reality.
It actually is really. I think if you actually did a real reality show on TV and made it real, because it's actually very emotional. Usually, when you go in, like a lot of people are getting divorced. Like I have a client right now that her daughter was diagnosed with cancer, has to sell her house right. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that actually happens in these things.
Right. Oh, wow.
And so actually showing the truth of it would be better than, I think that show's weird. I think all of them are a little weird.
That's something you don't even think about. Right, exactly. Because we glamorize it so much.
Yeah,
but
for
it's not really, it's most of them aren't glamorous at all. And dealing with the buyers is different than the sellers, because usually like if it's not a flip or a new build, there's something emotionally happening in that house. It's an emotionally charged sale.
Interesting. So, I was thinking about how your job would be, you need to be really good at connecting with people, because like a home, especially if you're selling it, for example, and you made all these memories there, like with your children and everything around you in your life is like happening in that home, that selling it would probably be like really emotionally hard for some people.
Right. It's very emotional. And it's funny because people will take like stuff from the house. Like I've had people take doors where they put their kids' heights on it, and they'll literally take doors out of the house, which we put in the disclosures. We always do like a really nice book for people of pictures because of how the house was when we sold it. So that they have like a Apple book that they can refer to like with their kids and stuff. Because it is emotional. I mean, people are like, half the time, I mean, like I see three or four people cry a week, literally talking about selling their home. It's really emotional.
Is it harder to deal with sellers or buyers?
I would say it's more emotional on the selling side because there's a loss, right? When you buy, there's actually a gain. They're excited usually to be in there, right? But selling is usually there's some excitement sometimes, but there's always apprehension. And like when you're selling with children in the house, like we won't put our sign up. We'll have to be really careful about putting our sign up because the worst thing is not telling the children. And we actually coach our clients on how to tell their children that they're selling a house, because if you come home and you have a 5 or 7 year old, right? And there's a sign up in front of the yard, it's like, it's shocking you really feel shocked. Mm-hmm. I sold my own house, and this is what I do for a living. And I remember the sign going up, and I had told everyone, obviously, and coached, like, talked to my kids and everything. And I felt sick to my stomach when I saw the sign go up.
So the psychology of real estate, we don't think about that.
Right. No, not at all. Because you think you'd want to be, like, hip to what are the areas that are a good investment, or, like, just obviously being knowledgeable about the process of buying and selling. But, yeah, I feel like you have to be really sensitive.
You have to be really sensitive and really clear. And what we always do too is people hear what they want to hear. So whenever we're saying something in a listing meeting, we're talking about what we're going to do, we always put it in writing because it's amazing how they will literally, because it's so emotional. I don't know if you've ever been, whenever you go through a really emotional time, you remember what you want.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And, right? So it's selective memory on mm-hmm. it. So we always have to put it in writing so that they were really clear on what we said in both ways. So it's kind of an interesting, it's actually, I love it. Yeah. I love the emotionality of it. Like commercial world isn't emotional at all. I think it's beautiful. And I think that helping people through that change and creating a new life with them and helping them move through it is one of my favorite things.
And on the flip side of buying a home, if it's someone's like first home and they maybe are going to start something there, that's exciting.
Oh, it's so fun. Like, it's always like I was walking a house. I'm like, can you imagine your holidays here? Like, what would you put in this room? Like, how would you use this?
Yeah, exactly.
I love that part of it.
I know a lot of people, have you guys ever visited a childhood home or like a home that you previously lived in years ago?
Oh, yes, recently,
how
actually.
How weird is that?
Oh, it's bizarre because it seems so big when you're a kid.
Yeah.
Even though the house that I grew up, ranch-style home, in Sebastopol in Sonoma County, on an acre of land, the actual house is tiny. Growing up in it, it felt big. And now as an adult, when I went back, and I haven't been there in 20 years, it was tiny. I'm like, how did we do this?
Yeah.
And it was very emotional. It's like, that's where I had dinner every night. That's where I slept, had my, you know, sleepovers in there. And there's nothing like that.
Right. You romanticize a home.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I've been thinking a lot about this. And what is a home, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a home actually is people think it's a physical space. But as you said, it changes. But in your mind, you romanticize it.
Mm-hmm.
Really, home is the people that are in your home. So that's, it's interesting when I talk to people about their home, we give them the books. And we talk a lot about that is that where are you going? And just remember that really this is the core of the people that you're going with. So, and that's what hurts a lot because sometimes they feel like they're leaving a home. But a lot of times it's a divorce situation or people are moving out or someone has passed away. So they're actually leaving a person, but they associate it with a home.
When you got into real estate, is this something, the psychology of this, did you know that this was going to be part of it?
It's funny because I actually took psychology in college, so I'm really happy I did that. And I took some life coaching courses, which I'm really happy I did. I didn't realize how much it would be. And at the same time, for me, it was the biggest draw. Because it's like we all want to be in connection, right? And when you're in a really emotional part of someone's life, they really depend on you. And that type of connection feels good for both people. And you're really helping them move through.
I almost wonder if that's why she's done so well.
Yeah, I was just going to say, is that why you're so darn successful?
Yeah,
like, you
know what I mean?
Because hit her signs all over town, no matter where you are in Los Angeles or even in the desert area,
right,
too.
Right, in the desert, too, now. Yeah.
Do you get a lot of people, I was thinking about this, do you get a lot of people that go through open houses that you have who aren't necessarily buying a house? They're just curious.
They're stealing things.
Yeah.
I've had someone shower in a house that was for rent, yes. Or for sale, excuse me.
Wait, really?
He had rented it and apparently thought he could still shower there. It was very bizarre.
How did you react to that?
Excuse me, sorry, you gotta go.
We had to, we locked the door.
Oh, jeez.
We had to get the police there and ask him to leave and not shower there.
Oh, my gosh.
So that was kind of a crazy experience. But normally, we have a lot of, every neighbor wants to see their house, which always makes people feel really exposed when you're actually selling a house. And a lot of people will go for ideas. So,
Oh, right. Design ideas. How did they set up their kitchen or living room? Or
yeah, and then sometimes you have the creepy neighbors that just keep coming back. You're
You
really need to not be here. And sometimes you have owners that will not allow certain neighbors. So that's when you're like, you have to stop gate them at the front and like say, do you have a card so they can only come with their agents?
Oh.
So it's a whole thing. I'm telling you, yeah.
Interesting.
Everyone thinks it's easy.
So when we were talking in the newsroom earlier, Pete, our managing editor, was like, I want to know some juicy stuff. Like as far as
people showering when they shouldn't be.
Yeah. I recently passed Aaron Spelling's old home in Holmby Hills. That's like one of the biggest homes in LA County, isn't it?
Right. Yes.
And then there, do you know this, Marla? Have you seen it?
No.
It's huge. It's like 56,000 square feet or something. And a British heiress, I think her family was in like race car driving or something. Anyways, has a lot of money. She had it. And then she listed it for like $175 million. I mean, it's like bigger than the White House. Huge. I'm a little bit curious. How do you even find a buyer at that level?
I mean, there's not that many buyers at that level. And so you pretty much go on the Forbes list of 1,000 and you go down the list, right?
Oh.
The truth is, for me at least, I feel like those homes are they're huge. I mean, how would you find anybody in that house?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So I think people are leaning a little more towards more, and even if they're higher end, even if they're, you know, a 10,000 square foot house, they're not a 30 or 40,000 square foot house. You know, obviously most people are leaning towards a smaller, more intimate settings, more connected.
Right.
It's interesting. I had a client the other day that was from a really, really wealthy family on the East Coast, and he lived in a 20,000 square foot house as a kid. And he said that they had suites on every single child had their own suite, and then they had a butler and a cook. And he said when they moved in that house, everybody lost connection, ruined their family, because everybody had their literally own apartment.
Right.
So I think that the really large houses, it's tough. I do.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I think this house in particular had like a bowling alley and ice skating rink. Do you see that a lot? Like certain like full-fledged sports courts in homes, like tennis courts, basketball courts, things like that?
I mean, not every day, no. there's probably about 50 to 100 of those that have that are large, large, large.
Right.
Most people do. You know, most people aren't as that private on those, but there's some of them. There's some of them.
So for someone who, I've never bought or sold a house or a condo or a townhouse, anything. And I feel like living in a place in LA, it's intimidating, you know? And that's why I was interested in even doing this podcast, because I was like, okay, would be the jump start. Well, I'm going to learn about stuff and it's going to seem less like scary, daunting in a way, I guess. So I'm sure that even if it's not a client of yours, just people in your life, what do you tell people that are first time home buyers? Like, look for maybe a small condo first, invest in anything, or what do you like typically tell people?
First of all, I think that it's the most important thing is to get in and feel comfortable. And I don't want you to feel scared. I don't want anyone to feel scared. Mm-hmm. So it's like gliding into it, right? So it's a big purchase. And at the same time, it's really, really important to get in the market. So the first thing is to find someone that you trust and you want to work with and just explain to them. And if they're not sensitive to your needs and connected to you, then that's not a match, right? You really need to enter softly in the market. You really should be working with somebody when you enter the market, because you don't know what you're doing. And it is your biggest purchase that you'll probably ever make for a while. Then what I would really suggest doing is move up every 3 to 5 years. So take the gain, keep just continually moving up, because in Los Angeles, what the market will do is it will outpace you. And that's what's happened to a lot of people, is that they never got in and now they want to get in, and they, you know, now they're 40 and they want to get into $1.5 million and it's really too expensive.
Right.
Instead of buying in maybe an outer area, an up and coming area at like $350,000, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then that went up to $450,000 and then taking that money and moving up.
So please, when you say move up, what do you mean? Every 3 to 5 years?
So what I did and what I always suggest people to do, and what we really have, our clients are pretty much full, like, lifers. So what we do is we basically make a plan, like, let's get you in the market. And people always want to be exactly where they want to be and have this exact house. But it's like, no, you have to enter first. Mm. So it's like baby steps going into the marketplace. So buy that $300,000 condo in Playa Del Rey. You know, take it, live in that for 3 to 5 years, fix it up, make it look so cute that somebody wants to live it. And then take the money from the gain on that plus the money you put in.
Gotcha.
Move to a small house. And usually it takes people, you know, honestly, 3 to 4 moves to get to the house where they're going to actually have children and live their life.
Interesting. So, 3 to 4.
Yeah.
Wow. So let's say you're going for that $300,000 condo in Marina Del Rey or wherever
Playa.
You say. Playa Del Rey. Not Marina Del Rey.
Westchester. We'll find you a spot. Yeah. Don't worry. We got you.
What are you looking for? Like, let's say you find a couple houses on Zillow or whatever, and you talk to your agent and you're like, I like this place. Let's look at it. What are some things you should look for when you're physically there in person?
Well, usually you're going to be at a condo, so you want to definitely look at the HOA and all the regulations and everything that's there. Make sure that it's a solid HOA for that, uh-huh. right? You want to make sure that you like the area. You have to be 70 to 75% there, not 100%. You're not going to find 100% of everything you love on your first condo. So you just want to feel like you like the vibe. Go to the condo morning, noon, and night. Meet some of the neighbors. Ask the neighbors what they think. Yeah. Because they are the first people to tell you if it's good or bad, right? So usually in a condo environment, always ask. Just say, hey, I'm thinking about buying this. What do you think? If they're rude and they shut the door in your face and they tell you to go away, you might not want to live there, right? Because that's going to be your neighbor.
Yeah.
Right.
So, they seem nice.
Bring them cookies.
I made you these. HOAs, so can you ask, someone that I know bought a condo in Costa Mesa, and she was saying that they have to disclose how much is in their HOA budget, which is something she wished she would have known ahead of time. Is that
a thing? Was not working with the right agent because she should have known that ahead of time. Let's be clear.
Contact Tammy Halton Party as soon as possible.
Because that goes into, obviously, like fixing things up around the area, right?
Yeah, that's called the reserve. So you want to have a high reserve. That's why I said get the HOA documents, because you want to have a high reserve in the condo association. So like, let's say there's a leak, let's say the roof falls apart, that you're not putting money in, because otherwise what they'll do is they'll do a call and then you'll have to put money in, and maybe you have to put $5,000 in and you don't have it. So you want to make sure the reserves are at a certain level. And they've actually, the government's come in and demanded that there are reserves, but you just want to be really, you want to know everything about it when you're going in.
So down the line, you're not like, wait, I have to pay how much?
Right.
Where's this coming from? Right.
Or there's a lawsuit on it and you didn't know about it. You have to work with a good agent. Work with us.
Seriously. And I love what you told me the last time that we shot together. It was that the return rate of your clients, it's higher than others simply because of the customer service that you provide. I mean, I sound like this is a commercial, but really, I mean, it's fascinating the extra mile that you go.
Yeah, we have 57% of our clients return to us, and the average is 11%. And those are what we can track. So that was, yeah. So it's lifers. And it's because of the plan. It's like, you're not really selling real estate. You're really managing these people's portfolio in real estate. Right? So you have to look at it like, that's why it's like slow growth, like get in the market 2 to 3 years. And we keep you abreast, like as you own your place. We have somebody in our company that literally tells you what's for sale in your area. Like, this is where your market is every 2 to 3 years. So you know what's happening, because it's your biggest investment. Most people, it's their biggest investment.
Sure. Of course.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
I was going to say family is also a big investment. And you run this company. Yeah. You're a mom of four. I mean, how do you do this? How do you do it all?
Oh, God. I don't sleep a lot. I actually, you know, I have a good team around me. I really have a good team. And one of the things that I learned really in the last 3 years, because I did kind of was on fumes about 3 or 4 years ago, I learned that I had to take care of myself. Mm. And so I do take about a couple, like 2 hours out a day, usually 5 to 7 in the morning. And it's my time. And I go for a walk on the beach, and I dance, I meditate, I pull goddess cards. I just do my thing. Mm. And I think that's recharging ourselves. And we've talked about this a lot. Mm. It's like the most important thing, because you do a lot too, Marla.
Right, but I'm not nearly as successful as this one over here.
You guys are probably both really good at multitasking.
Yeah, we're going to arm wrestle on that one while we're doing a thousand other things.
Sure.
Going back really quickly, I'm curious about this too, because I also want to talk about your background, because you have your foundation, which I think is pretty cool. I don't know if you guys have chatted about that. So let's get to that. But there's this rule of thumb that you should put 20% down. Is that true? Should you do that?
I mean, if you can put 20% down, you should. You should never put less than 10%. You really can't anymore. I like to do more down if possible, because I just grew up in the market, you know, in the 80s. However, a lot of people can't. So at least 20%, 20% is really good. If you at least 10%, if you're in a lower end marketplace, I mean, think about that. A $300,000 condo, that's $30,000 for 10% or $60,000 for 20. So the biggest thing is to get in the marketplace.
If you're moving from somewhere that's out of state, let's say you get a new job in LA and you're looking for a house, Let's just say you're looking to eventually buy a house, but you don't know the area that well. How do you find out if an area is like quote unquote up and coming or if it's like, meh? You know what I mean? Like, other than, I guess, just asking around, is there a way to like get an idea if a neighborhood is like, this is going to be a great neighborhood in a few years, like better get in on it sooner?
I'm a stats girl. So one of the things that I think is important is a lot of people will go in and say, oh my God, this is the best neighborhood because they want you to buy there, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of real estate agents will just say that. What I like to do and show people is, what is the growth? What has been the growth in the last 6 months, 3 months? Hmm. Because if you look at different areas, you can see that growth. I also really like to know, why are people moving there? So like, where is, you know, where's the train line coming in? Where are the stadiums? Like, where is the most affordable area close to the most unaffordable area, right? Mm-hmm. So I kind of, like Venice, for instance, was very kind of run down for a while, and then Snapchat started coming in, and then the tech, and then it was like, oh my gosh, right?
Here we go. The place to be, sure.
Right. Inglewood, the same thing, when the street, like everything. So you want to keep just paying attention to that. I ask people, but I also ask for their hard numbers, because I think that you have to ask in the emotional sense of like, what is the feeling? And at the same time, what are the facts, right?
Yeah.
And then merge those two and then make a decision from there.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't Snapchat just move?
They're moving to Santa Monica Airport. Yeah. Some of their,
that. Oh. Yeah. Right. But to like that area of Santa Monica Airport? Oh.
Yeah. They rented 400,000 square feet.
They took over my favorite bar in Venice. Like they took over that whole street when they were first there and shut down all these areas around there. And I was like, had a personal vendetta against Snapchat for a while.
What was
Nikki's for anyone who
I remember Nikki's. Oh, that's fun. They're coming back. Don't you worry. They're opening back.
Oh.
Yeah, they're having, I don't know if it's being called
Breaking
Nikki's.
Breaking news.
They had a great Taco Tuesday.
They did, actually.
So on the flip side, let's say you're selling. I'm confused on how you would even know the value of your home. Like, obviously you can think about, okay, I live by the beach. That's value. Or, okay, I have 4 bedrooms. That's value. But then it's like you hear people talk about emotional value of like, there's these like character windows, or this room has like great lighting, or do you know what I mean? How can you like sort of judge value on your home? Or do you just rely on a real estate agent to do that?
Well, I think a lot of people do that on their own. They come in and sometimes people get really attached to something in their house. And that's probably one of the hardest things as a real estate agent. It's like sometimes they're really attached to something that maybe isn't a universal love, right? That happens a lot. We're like, oh my God, I love this, you know, green room. And we're like, oh, the green room. Green isn't really that big on rooms.
Right. Yeah. We're like, well, we don't love the green room.
And you have to be careful because it could be their grandma's favorite color. And she, you know, so it's, you tiptoe a lot. You're like, oh, green. Okay. That's great. Perfect. However, there's very soulful houses will get more money. Mm-hmm. So it depends on, you know, there's some designers that are coming in and they're getting 20 to 30% above market rate because of what the stylistically what the house feels like. So that does happen. It's more on the houses that have been really redesigned and reimagined than a house that has not. Although I've seen a few really great. I just was in a house, this tech guy, 32-year-old guy did. I was like blown away. He should be a designer.
Really?
I love when I see tech people coming in and it's like their little passion.
Oh,
and then
yes.
It's a teeny. It's only like 700 square feet. And it's so cool.
These people can do it all. Smart and good at interior design.
Yes.
Why didn't I get any of those jeans?
They don't have a podcast, though.
True. Thanks, Marla.
You're welcome.
Let's say you know you're going to put your house in the market at some point, is there certain things you can do to like prep it? Like, let's say paint the walls more neutral colors, or do you ever give advice like that?
Yeah. Well, so we actually have a whole handyman service that comes in and helps with everything. So we have full service on that because a lot of people don't want to do the work, and it's important to prep the home.
And that's all part of the staging process.
Yeah. We stage it and we paint it. We want to make sure that it's looks amazing because we sell it for more money. People are happier. Everyone gets more on the other end. Mm-hmm. And the buyer really gets the feel of what they want coming in too.
Yeah. So maybe if it's like kind of cluttered.
Oh, yeah. We like totally declutter. Oh, we declutter. Yeah. We paint.
Sure.
We do it all.
And these homes that we tour with her, Everything is totally staged, and I've learned that everything's negotiable. Because although a lot of times you go into these homes and it's gorgeous, it's like, I wouldn't change a thing.
Yeah.
And it says, oh, well, that's another $40,000 for the furniture inside if you want it.
Right, right. Which some people just buy it fully furnished because they don't want to deal right. with anything.
Yeah, then you don't have to go to Home Goods and yeah. find a couch on sale.
IKEA. Or,
yeah, yeah.
Spend a day putting the furniture
right,
together.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, that's true. I remember you did one on, I think it was just a garage for sale, but it was a yes. giant garage, and the cars in it were for sale too. Right?
They, well, the everything's negotiable. So yeah. that is really, that's the line I hear on every shoot. So the cars, all these sports cars, fancy cars, the car collector seller didn't necessarily want to get rid of these cars. But if you okay. come in and you say, I'm going to pay you $1 billion more, I'm sure yeah. he twists his arm.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
they might give him up.
You were so right. It's so funny. People, I will never sell this. I will never sell this. Oh, well, I would sell it for the right price.
Exactly.
It's always that, right?
Money talks. Money talks.
Have you seen anything super crazy in a house since doing these segments? Like, I remember there was a 3D wall, which I thought was interesting.
That's new, a 3D printed wall that's currently in a Mario Romano is the one who designed that one in Santa Monica, right on San Vicente.
Yeah. I know yeah. Mario. He's great.
Oh, he is. He's so great.
Very creative.
Very creative.
Yeah.
Shout out to Mario Romano. Maybe he's going to listen to this. I'll tell him too. Let's see. Just the underground space that we've come across at these estates in Bel Air, where from the outside you pull up and sure, it's a home, you know, in Bel Air, what you would expect, the gated, the amazing driveway to get to the house. But then you go downstairs, you take an elevator downstairs into an underground world that you would never see from the street, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's the pool and the wine cellars and the racquetball courts and the bowling alleys and the movie theaters. I mean, it's insane, the real estate that is below ground.
Sometimes I think, like, if I had a house that was super large like that with all of those options, I just wouldn't know what to do with myself.
Well, you have to think about all that
space. You
have
space. A lot to do.
Yes. You can play racquetball for 20 minutes. You can go to the movies. You
yeah.
can, yes, open a bottle of wine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of these homes. How many people are actually going to live in them?
I don't know. It seems like they're made for a party. I mean, it's funny. I like that. I actually like them being underground, like you said, though, as opposed to being so hugely, you know, ostentatious looking. So I do
right.
like the underground version of these homes better. I just think it's funny because I feel like people that live in these huge houses, it's almost like they're lonely. It's like they're, you know, they have these big parties mm-hmm. and then everyone leaves and you're like, okay, then what's going to happen?
Sure.
So, yeah, and to your point earlier about the family.
That lost connection.
Yeah.
Well, there was one home in Beverly Hills who it was husband and wife and a teenage son. And I don't remember the square footage. Let's say it was 12,000 square feet. Well, the mom wanted to sell because she was tired of having to contact her son for dinner via intercom. It was just too much to go get him. And so they had to downsize.
Wow. I think that's actually, but I think that's true. I think that's really true.
Well, she obviously wanted more of a connection to her son, right?
Right.
So it's just, it's better to be more intimate in that regard. And then when I shoot these properties with Tammy and otherwise, it is sort of nice to go home and have my little home. Because
yeah.
I'm like, this is so easy to clean.
Yeah.
You know, because it's daunting to see these properties that are so massive.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah. That's, I can't even imagine.
We call her Magical Marla because she, every time we shoot with her, we sell the house like the next day.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I didn't know that.
You need yes. to like put that on your resume.
Yeah. That's what we're going to call you, Magical Marla, from now on.
I like that. Thank you.
Hello and welcome to the News at Noon. I'm Magical Marla Tatum.
It sounds like Magic Mike.
Oh, or that.
Yeah, we'll think yeah. about a different one then,
yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
What's another M? Marvelous.
So sometimes you see on like certain reality real estate TV shows, they sort of lead to the idea that if you do a lot of renovations, it'll lead to like a bigger ROI. Do you find that to be the case? Or is it better to just kind of spruce it up a little bit? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally know what you mean. It depends on the house. Mm-hmm. Some people spruce or do a lot of renovations, and they do them again with the green room. You're like, no, terrible mm-hmm. renovation. So it's always good to have someone in beforehand that we help make sure that it's going to get you the best ROI. Really, kitchens and bathrooms are the best. Mm-hmm. However, I wouldn't go in and spend a lot of money to do it right now if you can do it through staging and just paint mm-hmm. and decluttering. Mm-hmm. That's usually what we do.
A fresh coat of paint goes a long way. Yeah. There's no question. But that's interesting. So if you are going to do that, though, the kitchen and the bathroom
right.
would be number one.
And master bath. Right. Master bath being the number one thing. And then also, like, if you go through a house and there's issues, like, I had this one house. It was the funniest thing. It had doors everywhere. I mean, it had on every room, it had, like, two doors.
Really?
So we just started closing up the doors. So every room had, like, one door. And they couldn't sell it until we closed up the doors.
And that did the trick.
Yeah. Literally.
So, like, you literally just shut the doors.
We walled off the doors. We just went around and shut the doors. It's pretty easy.
Do you put like cookies out? Is that a thing?
Oh my God. When I first started, I made cookies for everyone. I was like the cookie girl. We put Starburst out and sunglasses now. And then Mother's Day, we'll do roses and Valentine's Day and stuff like that. We'll do things.
Someone was telling me how the real estate agent I was talking about, who was on House Hunters, who was like forced into it, was saying how, you know how there are Facebook groups that are centered around your community? I don't know if you guys have come across this, but where I'm from, the specific neighborhood has its own like group where a bunch of people talk about what's going on in their small town. And one of the things he was saying is that a lot of homes are posted there first before they're like listed anywhere, and sometimes transactions will happen, but then they always end up, something happens to where they end up going to a real estate agent. Have you had, like, just because of the internet and availability of information and photos and video and all that stuff, has that affected like the real estate field?
Well, we have Nextdoor and people will post things. It's pretty rare, because what happens is the buyer wants to get a deal and the seller wants to sell for the highest price. Mm. So it never usually works out. So they always usually come to market or call us for price opinions, and then you tell them really what the price is. So it's never really, it hasn't created an issue. The best thing in the marketplace is to go out to the marketplace overall worldwide.
Yeah.
Going to your neighbor probably, unless it's your next door neighbor and they're willing to overpay to get the lot, it's usually not going to be the case.
Hmm. I love hearing about how sometimes my father-in-law was eyeing a house for years. And he would just say, like, hey, if you ever thinking about selling, like, I'm over here, I'm ready. And like sometimes people get like notes in their mailbox, like, hey, if you ever want to sell. Mm-hmm. And they're not even thinking about moving, but they're like, well, shoot, okay, let's do mm-hmm. it.
Right.
You know?
A lot of those notes are from agents that just want to list your house.
Oh.
Just to be clear, that's
sneaky.
Normally not somebody that wants to buy.
Can you talk about the difference between a real estate agent versus a broker?
Sure. So an agent works under a broker. So I have my broker's license, so I have agents that work underneath me. Mm-hmm. So at all of the firms, you have to have a broker of record, and then agents can work underneath them. If you're a broker, you can basically be on your own, or you can have people working underneath you. Agents have to hang their license with a broker.
Gotcha. So when you first got into this field, you got your real estate license.
I just became
first.
A broker.
Oh.
I just went straight to broker status. I just went straight there.
She does not mess around. Yes.
What were you doing before that? What like kind of work were you doing?
I used to build affordable housing throughout Los Angeles. I got my master's in business, and then I was in entertainment before that.
Oh, I was reading that your parents were both sort of, like, your father was in home construction and your mom was in design?
My mom was in, she did design and high-end home construction, and so was my dad, yeah. So I was raised in it.
So that's kind of cool, because you probably were at least a little bit aware of, like, how construction goes sometimes.
Oh, yeah, I know,
like,
how to put windows in. I've installed toilets.
Do you do tile? Do you do tile?
Yeah, I can do tile.
I've done my own tile floor before once, and I swore I would never do it again. That is hard work.
It is, but it's kind of fun.
It's gratifying at the end.
I mean, then you can be like, I did this.
Absolutely.
You know?
No, it turned out great in the kitchen. It was
in the
nice
kitchen.
Slate. Yep. Very proud of that one. But, you know, during it, I was cursing. I'm like, why didn't we just hire somebody?
I thought this is such a good idea.
Yeah. It's fun, though. It's fun to do it.
Yeah, that's kind of cool, though.
I would not recommend it to everybody, though, because it's like Marla. You're like, why am I doing this at the time?
Yeah. So when you decided to, what year did you open, did you start your business?
2005.
Was that scary? Or were you just sort of like...
It's so funny. This is the second time in a day someone's asked me if I was scared. I was not scared.
Wait, someone else asked you that today?
Yeah, yesterday. Oh. It was weird. Was it scary to... And no. I was just like, I'm doing this. And I think as an entrepreneur, you just kind of go. I mean, it just... It, you, I don't know if it's stupidity in a way. You're like, okay, let's just do this. I just started it and did it. And I never thought about being scared. Yeah. Fear is not... Fear is not... You know, you just have to keep moving forward.
I know you've been asked this question too, but... Are you surprised but how successful you are? I mean, you're almost 15 years in and you've been topping the lists of realtors and this and that. You've sold 3.6 billion plus residential and commercial.
I don't ever think about it. I never, like, when I'll never forget, like, 6 years ago, somebody, I was on the top three in the country of real estate agents, and someone called me and told me, and I was like, really? Are you sure? Did you get that right? So I think when you really love what you do, it's like you don't really think about the success of it. You just love being, you're successful because you're doing what you love. It's a difference. It's a difference. Yeah. And it feels better that way.
I mean, Marla, I feel like if you think about all the stories in your life you've done, that would probably seem overwhelming, right?
When someone asks me, like, what's your favorite story you've ever done, I suddenly draw a blank because it's just like, oh, gosh, I need to actually take some time to think about that. So that was, you know, what was your most emotional or the best sale that you've ever done or clinched?
I'd have to take a minute to think about it, actually.
There's so many.
And there's so many emotions that go, different feelings that go throughout it. So
what was your first one?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I this is funny. So my best friend was totally not in the market for a house at all, but I was so excited about my real estate career. I found her a house and I made her buy it. Oh. And then she was dating this guy and they were going to move in together. So I was so excited. I made him sell his house. So my first two clients with my best friend and her now husband.
Oh my gosh, and I real estate
made
agent
them. So you just said you have to do this.
I was like, I'm glad. And I got her in the market. She wasn't in the market. I'm like, you have to do it. And now she lives in a really beautiful house because I've moved her up 3 or 4 times now. But yeah, so I made her buy it. I literally made her buy it. I had her come over on a Sunday, and she put in an offer the next day.
Does she thank you?
Now, I don't know. Now she does.
Yeah, now she does. Yes.
The time she was cursing me.
That's hilarious. How old are your children?
15. I have a girl. 15 and 11 are my girls. And then I have 2 7-year-old twin boys.
So when you started your business, were you sort of like, you started in 2005.
I had a baby.
You had a baby.
So
that's
we call her my golden child because I sold to four of her friends in my mommy and me group. So that's kind of how I started the business. After my best friends were done, I went to the mommy and me group, and we're like, you need to buy a house now.
Yeah. Did you have – were you good at, like, delegating tasks and managing people and just running a company at first? Because I feel like that would be kind of a learning curve.
Not at all. I mean, I was not good at that at all. As a matter of fact, I would put – my baby in the back of the car and I would take the signs in the car and I'd be taking them out and doing it myself for the first really 2 to 3 years. And then I hired my first guy at like 6 months in and he was like a jack of all trades. He's still with me. He runs my company now. So that was really helpful. But you have to do everything. You just do it. You just figure it out. Yeah. Just dig in. It's fun.
Do you have a good like nanny? Or like cleaner.
Wait,
or
you're like, you're not going to steal her from me, are you?
That is
what is happening here? I know. That's why I have to make it clear.
They're very hard. They're hard to come by. I didn't realize hard they are.
I sell real estate and I'm a nanny connector because all my clients, I move nannies around because if they move, they have a nanny. That's great. I move them to somebody that's just moving in. It's hilarious. So I have an amazing nanny. She's been with me since my oldest daughter was 4 months old. And
oh my goodness.
She's like,
she's family.
Oh, she's like my sister. Well, I would say she's like my daughter, but I'm going to go with sister.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, because I feel like that would just be really overwhelming because that's a lot of things.
It is.
Four kids.
We all need help. We all help each other out. You know, yeah. It's just the way life is.
Yeah. Right? I heard you talk about an acronym that you use, GAL.
Oh, yeah.
What does it stand for?
Come in gratitude, acceptance, acknowledgement, and love. So I call it GAL. I GAL everyone. So, like, if I go into a hotel, like, if I go up and somebody looks exhausted and they've been in Vegas story. I went to Vegas and the guy was checking everyone in and he looked exhausted. I'm like, oh, my God, thank you for checking me in. I acknowledge him. You look exhausted. You know, acceptance, like, oh, can I do anything for you? Like, I had a water in my purse. I'm like, do you want a water? And he's like, who are you?
Yes. And then, are you trying to roofie me?
I know. I mean, I had it was over. And then I was just like, oh my gosh, I really, you know, appreciate you being here. And da-da-da. And I was just really kind to him. Mm-hmm. And nobody else was kind to him because they were so angry from waiting in the line. And he looks at me and I got the cheapest room at Caesars. It was $139 because I'm cheap like that. And I said, you know, I'm just here. I would love to get a bigger room, but I don't want to pay for it. I'm on a budget. And he put me in a suite. And I'm not kidding you, like, a suite. And he's like, are you only here one night? And so just, it's amazing by going in. And you have to ask, too, if you want to, you know, a little bit. But it's just, it's amazing what happens. So.
Is that part of your personal code? I read about that, too.
My code is a little bit different. It's like my I ams. So, like, who I am as a person. So who I am as a person is different. So I am a seeker. I am love. I am connection. I am playful. And I am a rule breaker as well.
Hence the playful part.
So that's my playful part. So that's who I am. So I have all these things that I work with my people on. Like, I teach them how to gal people. So we do a lot of that. Like, when someone picks up the phone and they're angry, if you just say, instead of going and being angry back, you just say, thank you for calling, you know, like, what can I help you with? Thank you for working with us. I know you're upset. Like, acknowledging what's going on. It just changes the whole dynamic of a conversation.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And who wants to be in anger like that?
Well, it's, I equate that to when you're upset and you haven't smiled. And then even if you're upset and then you just, even a fake smile, you put a smile on your face, it does literally make you feel better.
Right. Fake it till you make it, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's a lot like the gal.
Right. The gal has been, really good for my company and for myself.
I love the gal. I
do
really
love the gal too.
My mother-in-law is like that.
I need the gal. Because a lot of times I can be, you know, in the stress of life. I mean, I think the difference between you and me, there are plenty, but, and I mean that affectionately toward you, that I aspire to be more like you because you are so... You really are full of gratitude. That's what you exude. Yet you exude strength, and you also empower everyone else around you.
Thank you.
And I think that's the key to your success.
Thank you. And that's actually for all of us. Like, you do that too, though, because I see you working. So one of the things about us bringing I here's my thing this year is I got this on New Year's is empowering each other to rise together. Men, women, and children, because I feel like everyone's beating everyone down constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like let's like bring them together and bring them up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting the chills right now.
Oh, for sure.
So that's like part of the gal and all of the things of who you are as a person and your code and seeing each other for who you are and the connection. Because when we see each other, we really see who you are and the love and what you just said to me felt so good and thank you.
Mm.
It's like you start feeling good and you bring that out in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And if we did that, I think it would be
a lot better. I always feel like people like that have a warm color around them, which might
sound
like a hippy-dippy. Right. But I feel like you can always see like someone like that. It's like they have very warm colors around them.
Right. It's their light.
Mm-hmm.
It's their light.
Definitely. Yeah. When did you start? So you're the founder and CEO of Life Change Warriors.
Right.
Right? When did you start that?
I started that a year ago.
And can you talk a little bit about what that is in a nutshell and like what made you start that?
Yeah. So I started it a year ago. I've wanted to start it for 17 years. Basically what it does is I feel, again, I want to empower everyone to rise together. So we have a pretty large homeless population in Venice. And I wanted to, instead of like getting these people showers and, you know, like all of it, I'm like, why don't we teach them to fish? Like, go through their life and see what their purpose, passion, and passion are. Because purpose, passion, and connection are what people live from, right? So I wanted to go in and talk to them and figure out a way to empower them to be who they wanted to be. So we put together a class. We basically go into their life. We work with homeless women, pregnant women at Harvest Home is really who we go to usually. And we teach a six-week class. If we go through their past, we go through their lifeline of what happened to them, which is a lot of abuse. I was molested as a kid, so I can relate. I'm very relatable to these women, and I see them for who they are. And they tell their story, which it disempowers their story. Then they go into their fears of where they're at. And all of our fears, it's funny. If I asked you both what your biggest fear is what we should talk about, we can all relate to our biggest fears because we're all one, right?
Yeah.
And then we take what that is, and then we start making a roadmap for their future, which everybody has a roadmap within them. You have one, Marla. We all have it. It's just bringing it out, right? And then we build that roadmap and how to get there in baby steps in all the areas of their life. And then we fund them. We give them each $2,500 to get into housing for 3 to 4 months to get stabilized so that they can succeed. And we've had 50 graduates, and they've all succeeded.
In less than a year, you've had 50 graduates?
Yeah, in less than a year. So
that's incredible. Congratulations on that and what work you're doing. And I feel like we definitely want to acknowledge what you just said, you know, in telling your story that you were molested as a young girl.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
thank you for sharing that.
Thank you. I think that's important too. I think that for women, we're all related in some ways. And I think that I think it's one out of two or one out of three women something has happened to. So I think that talking about it and talking with men, and the one thing that I really do believe, and I have a lot of great men in my life that I've known too, and it's like bringing us all together and empowering us all to move up from that. So a lot of the people from Harvest Home, the women, I'm in a YPO group, and the men have helped hire them and given them jobs. So it's been like a very universal effort. So I really appreciate that.
And I wonder how many people have been able to like openly talk about some things that have happened in their life in a situation like that.
Well, here's the thing that's interesting. I do my lifeline first. And so they don't know who I am. They think I'm just a person coming to teach a class. And when I say it to them, when I tell them what what happened to me, you hear from the crowd, they're like, screw him, I'm going to get him. Oh, my God, same thing happened. And they start there. It's like camaraderie. And then all of a sudden, we take it from that, from the anger, to this is a thread. And you know what? We can't live in this thread. We need to move on from this. Mm-hmm. So what can we do? This happened, and that is in our past. Let's get our fears now, and then let's create a future for everybody. And a lot of them do want to help around, you know, being molested. There's a lot of different things that happen in this group, but they all want to move the world forward, which I love. And we support, and they are. I mean, I have one working at an affordable housing place helping people. I've got a lot of them working in social work now. It's pretty cool what they're doing.
Wow. So you're basically having people write down, when you say roadmap, like sort of, all right, here's something that I can do in the next couple weeks. Here's a goal that I want to work toward this year. Like sort of.
Right. So it's really five areas of their life, like their personal, their kids, their career, their footprint, and their friends and family. And then taking that goal, like here's an example. We had 10 girls in a class. 6 of them didn't have their GED yet. So they wanted to get their GED. So I said, okay, well, that was their goal, getting their GED. So what can you do next week to get it? We could call and make a reservation, you know, call and go in. So they did. When could you take the test by? Will you study by? Did it? So it was very like baby steps of how to get there. All 6 of them got their GED within 3 months.
Mm.
Because they had a plan. Like, no one planned. So, like, they all want these things. And it's very simple.
But I feel that this is applicable to everybody in everyday life for accomplishing whatever goal it is, whether it is buying your first home or getting that next job that you want. Have that action plan laid out in baby steps.
Right. And we actually do it for women, too, not just homeless. When we actually take it to women that in the community, and they actually do it. Like, I work with some women that I have a lot of moms at the school, my school and other schools, that feel like since they raise their kids, they can't do anything then. But those women are so brilliant. So I actually have been teaching classes to women to get them into a new career after raising kids too. Because it's just believing in people, believing, connecting, and knowing.
I feel like a lot of it is just having someone else say it to you. Like, you can do it. Like, you should do it. Like, hearing it right. from someone else.
Being believed in. Yeah. Being mm-hmm. believed in mm-hmm. and saying it's okay. And like, and all of a sudden, they're like, yeah, I can believe it. And then they do that one step. They literally make that call, and they're like, check it off the list. I did it. And then they do the next step. And it's like, it's empowering, because everything is a little goal that happens. So,
And I think that the first step, though, is loving yourself. Right?
Right.
And that goes back to the personal code, which I brought up And you said those are my I ams. So I think that's important to point out that we all need to have a personal code, and that is basically identifying who you are.
Right.
So you said you're a seeker. So
I'm a seeker for knowledge. So I just love, I am, you know, I want everyone to live their best life. And so I read about a book a week. I listen to podcasts all the time. I listen to music. I want to have everybody live their best life. I'm in this love relationship. I'm like co-creating love with this man. Cause I'm like, all my friends are like, where'd you find him? I'm like Home Goods aisle 3. No.
Yes.
You know,
An airplane, you know, though.
Yeah. I did find him on an airplane, but actually we really co-created, like if you really think about it, co-creating what you want in life. Like if you buying a house, how are you going to do it? Creating a plan around what you want to do is really important in all aspects of your life. So, and you have to love yourself first. That's and be conscious. Wake up, be conscious in order to meet someone else that's conscious.
Yeah. That's something I feel like that takes time too. You know? Like sort of I love myself, I can tell myself that, but I feel like, you know, it takes time to sort of understand who you are and things that you like about yourself and why you love yourself. Do you know what I mean?
I totally know what you mean. And I think that you have to do my Life Change Warrior class with me. because the thing, it does take time. And the thing is that if we all start moving in that direction of the baby steps of doing it, though,
yeah,
of maybe a breathwork transformation class, like there's so many different tools that we can use. And for so long, I think that a lot of people aren't using those. And so it's like waking up to all of that. And the more, it's almost like you said, you see a light around those people. When you see a light around someone, don't you want to be like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, I want to be like their best friend. Mm-hmm. Like I want to hang out with them a lot.
Mm-hmm. Right. I call that my lamppost theory. Like if you're lit up like a lamppost, everybody else wants to come around and like light up against you.
Like a
little
bug.
Yeah. They're like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
That's also why I'm having drinks with her tomorrow after work.
She's the lamppost.
Can you imagine if you like go to sell your home and Tammy walks in and you're like getting advice about selling your house, but also like how to change your life, how to like be happy in X, Y, and
everything.
Z areas.
Yes.
That's what I do though with them. I'm like, I have Hoffman. I mean, I love it. So I want a mouse.
So you guys both have things. Like Marla, I know that you have to head out and do a shoot.
I wasn't trying to be rude. I was looking to see my drive time to my shoot.
Yeah.
But I actually, I'm okay. I have a few more minutes either way.
You're on social media. You also have a bunch of YouTube videos. How can you just say like, what is the best way that, do you have people follow you like on Instagram, Facebook? Do you have all that?
I do. I'm not the best tech person in the world. I'm going to get better. I'm going to get somebody young in to do it. I do have followers though. I think a lot of people follow my Talking with Tammy talks. So those are fun to do. I'll find something like, you know, resetting your clock, like you said, and I'll just talk about it. Of them. You know, it's just kind of fun. The more people we can influence in a positive, uplifting way, the better off we all are.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking up her Instagram right now because obviously I follow her. And it's just your first and last name, correct?
Yeah. Tammy Halton Pardee.
There you are.
And
I can't follow you because I already do. Yes, I already do.
And Marla Tell. Follow MARLATELLEZ.
Oh, good one. Yes.
She's got all the breaking news, first of all. Can we, for a second, shed light on what Marla does during breaking news? I was talking to you about this the other week. I don't think that people realize this, but when there's a breaking news situation, they'll just throw an anchor on live TV and give them one sentence of info and make them talk for 30 minutes at a time and just have to get information as it comes. Meanwhile, they're breaking into programming. I mean, it's a lot, and you are a professional.
Well, thank you very much.
Seriously.
It's a terrifying moment when, just to inform Tammy, so in the afternoon, I am the breaking news anchor. There's no one else really here in the building that's going to handle it except for me. So when there's a pursuit or there's a fire or whatever it may be, a shooting, God forbid, then I'm thrown in and I break into whatever programming is on, and I have a microphone and I have my phone or my laptop, and I'm looking for information on Twitter. And there are some people on the assignment desk who will feed me some information, but you're live the entire time. And so it'd be if you were in this room by yourself right now and just had to just talk about the shooting and try and get information on your own. It's a scary situation, but the more I've done it, you know, on my own, the more comfortable I feel. And and it always feels worse than it is. So when I go back and if I hear myself thereafter, I'm like, oh, I handled that really well. I don't know how I just spoke for
like in your mind,
25 minutes.
Oh my God. But yeah.
No. And if I could say what I really wanted to say, you know, then it would be a lot easier.
Yeah.
It's amazing how calming, though, you are. Because you are like, you just kind of hold it in. Even when I'm with you, when I'm shooting and when I'm watching you on the news, it's always like, da, 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 da. Yeah. And you have a good presence about you. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting because, you know, what goes on inside is something completely different.
There's no teleprompter? There's.
Yeah.
What are we going to?
Bleep in my head. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. People on TV are really good. Live TV are really good at
concealing.
Yes. Keeping it in and keeping it together.
Yes.
I think.
Because I can, I've known, if you know me and you're listening to this, you know that I have a sailor's mouth, I tend to, which my mom is not proud of. But on television, I have never, knock on wood, I have never said any, you know, just off the cuff or...
Yeah.
I guess I shouldn't really be proud of that.
Yeah.
Like, way to go, Marla. You haven't sworn on live TV. Well.
And you can smile through it. And look at you. You're smiling all the time now. You're always smiling.
My husband's like, no, not the case. Not always smiling. Oh,
so where are you guys going to get drinks tomorrow?
Oh, we're deciding that, actually.
Yeah.
Yes. And
it's like the nanny thing. We're not going to tell you.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
I was going to say, I haven't really hung out in this, like, local area as much, like, dinner-wise.
After Nikki's is closed, you just can't go
out. I just, like, totally avoided the West Side after Nikki shut down. I was like, I can't be there anymore. It's too hard. Oh, that's funny. Okay, well, thank you guys very much for coming in, because I feel like you're both really busy.
Thank you.
I know it was fun.
I always appreciate the time.
I had a good time.
It was great.
Isn't it fun, like, just being able to chat with people?
It is.
It's like girl time. We're having girl talk. It's good.
I like it.
With big headphones on and a big microphone in front of us. Yes. Yeah. We should add just a glass of wine in here, and then it'd get real fun.
Are we allowed to do that here?
I don't think so.
Because you can't do it on TV. No. You know what I mean? Yes. I'm, like, tempted to ask. You know?
You can't do it on TV. You're like, well, when the breaking news is
happening. Yes. It's
like, I do have a glass of wine under my thing. You guys think I'm drinking coffee?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Very much.
Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to rate, review, and subscribe to Olympic and Bundy wherever you listen. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and every episode is available on olympicandbundy.com as well. Once again, I'm Kelly Taylor, and thanks again for listening.